Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life. This is part two of our interview with Ingrid Skop.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm your host, Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're joined by Dr. Ingrid Skop, Vice President and Director of Medical Affairs at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Skop is a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist with more than 30 years of experience caring for women and delivering babies. And now she focuses on research and public policy related to women's health and the dignity of every human life. Our conversation today will focus on the science-based risk and complications of abortion procedures, including both surgical and drug-induced abortions. We'll also talk about how maternal health data is collected, where it falls short, and why accuracy matters when women's lives are at stake. Dr. Skop, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so glad to be with you, Toni.
So we've been talking mostly about the chemical abortion, but let's go back to the basics. What are the main types of abortion procedures that women undergo today, and how does gestational age affect medical risk? I want to answer this question for people that may not know the difference in chemical abortion. That's been the theme on many of our programs, chemical abortion, because that is probably the number one way women are having abortions. But there are some other procedures as well. So I want them to understand that there's more than one type. And so if you could go into that just a little bit.
Sure. The traditional abortion procedure was a first trimester surgical abortion. The abortion industry doesn't want to call it surgery anymore, by the way. They call it procedural because, again, it all has to do with the euphemisms and making it seem as easy as possible. Yeah. But this is a suction aspiration. And in the hands of an abortionist who's qualified, the complications are fairly minor. However, the further in a pregnancy you get, the more complications can occur. So after the first trimester, this procedure becomes what's called a dilation and extraction, or D&E procedure. Some people call it dismemberment abortion because that's what it is. And sadly, the child is big enough that he cannot be removed with just suction. And so, as the name implies, he's taken out that way. These become much more dangerous for women. The CDC's own data tells us that those early D&Es, 15 times more likely to kill a woman. A D&E that's done later, at the later part of the second trimester, is 76 times more likely to kill a woman. So they are very dangerous. And again, I alluded earlier, but the abortion industry does not like to be supervised.
Yeah.
And so we don't know, really, are the people doing these procedures, are they qualified? Do they know what they're doing? Because the complications can be quite catastrophic. And this has been documented by many watchdog organizations like Operation Rescue, if you want to hear some of these horrible stories. But those are surgical abortions. Yeah. Now, the reason that the abortion industry pivoted to medication abortion is not because there's fewer complications. There's actually 4 to 6 times as many complications with these drugs compared to those early surgical abortions. The reason they pivoted is they had a staffing problem. Doctors, obstetricians do not want to perform abortions. And so they were having trouble getting enough doctors to do the abortions they wanted done. And so that's part of the reason that these drugs there was such a political process that allowed them to enter the market. And I think, unfortunately, we could talk all day about motivations behind it, but for many doctors that were involved in that process, it was a very eugenic motivation. There were some women that they did not want having babies. And of course, early on, there was also a population control motivation. Yeah. But, today, as probably your listeners know, we have the opposite problem. We are not reproducing ourselves. Right. We're having a demographic collapse. And it's across the world because really, sadly, the narrative for so many years has been that children are a blight on the, you know, planet, that that children will ruin your life, that maternal, you know, mortality, that women might die in childbirth. I mean, all of these untrue things have been promoted to young women, but now they're afraid to have children. They're afraid to go through a pregnancy. So again, there's just so much truth that we really need to shine on this murky issue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I hadn't really thought about that, but with you're talking a procedure that has is 4 to 6 time has 4 to 6 times greater risk than a surgical abortion, but it's the number one method of abortion. And we're just saying it's okay.
And it's increasingly promoted to women. If you look at graphs from the year 2000 when it was approved until now, what you see is a very exponential increase. It's estimated that more than 2/3 of all abortions in our country are performed with these drugs. But again, they don't have to hire a surgeon. In fact, many times it's not even a doctor that's distributing these pills. And as we mentioned, they're now just being sent in the mail. They're circumventing the pro-life states legislation providing abortions in states that are trying to protect unborn life. In fact, more than half of abortion clinics don't even offer surgical abortions. So this is the only option that women have. And that they're self-managing their own abortions. They're going through this experience entirely alone. Okay. For so many of the women, whoever prescribed the drugs is in another state. Those doctors aren't available to care for these women. Mm-hmm. So the only option they have when they have a complication is to go to an emergency room. And that's why I know this is happening, because I'm seeing so many of these women in my ER in Texas who have nowhere else to turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's consistent with what we're seeing here at Assure as well. The numbers of chemical abortions are increasing. You know, just this week, we have a young lady that's coming in for an appointment, and she's already ordered the abortion pill. And so, you know, we're grateful that she's coming and praying that, you know, our staff has been praying that the pills get lost in the mail. But thankful that she is at least willing to come in and, you know, talk about it before she takes it. So you, one of your recent research areas involves emergency room visits following abortion. What are some of the findings that you look at when you look at ER data?
Right. So, you know, again, given the deficiencies in the data, you may say, how do you find, how can you find good data? Most abortions in our country are paid for privately. They're not paid with insurance, but an insurance database can be give you helpful data. So there are 17 states that allow their state Medicaid dollars to pay for elective abortions. So we purchased that data and we identified the abortions that were occurring. And then we looked to see what sort of medical events were happening afterwards. Okay. Within a month, about 1 out of 20 women go to an emergency room. So we saw that these abortions are resulting in a lot of ER visits. But then we looked closer and discovered that in more than 80% of those known abortion complications, they were miscoded as having been due to a miscarriage. So there's several reasons for this. I think when doctors see a woman who's upset, and if a woman has been bleeding for 2 months after an abortion, she's going to be upset. I think that they probably assume these are miscarriages.
Yeah.
But abortion advocates like Planned Parenthood also tell women, you don't have to tell the doctor.
Yeah.
So they say, pretend it's a miscarriage. The doctor can't tell the difference. It makes no difference in your care. So I think the women often don't tell the doctor what's happened. Sadly, they're also misled into thinking that in pro-life states that they will be prosecuted.
Yeah.
No state will prosecute a woman, but the women don't know that. And the abortion industry is more than happy to allow them to think that, so that they don't report these abortions. So we can see that that really clouds the data. But even more importantly, when a doctor doesn't know the circumstance that a woman's in, he's not going to be able to give as good a care. So often these are failed abortions with retained tissue. She's taken the drugs already, but if the doctor doesn't know that, he's going to send her out the door maybe with a prescription for more misoprostol that she's already failed. One of our studies demonstrated it took the women 3 emergency room visits before they finally were offered surgery. So again, when the doctors didn't know what was going on, the women were not getting good care.
Yeah. And once again, that's consistent with what we're seeing here at Assure. We've actually had patients and people that have, you know, I'm going to say gone undercover to say that that they've been told if you have complications, to go to the ER, but don't tell them that you took the abortion pill. Tell them that you're having a miscarriage. And it just kind of goes back to the miscoding and just the deception. And so that we can't get those, you know, numbers and the data that it says that there are some adverse, you know, effects from the abortion pill because they're not being reported.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's all the big plan so they can hide the complications and then continue to promote it as safe.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about maternal mortality. The term is frequently used in public debate. Is there a single clear definition of maternal mortality in the United States?
That is a very complex question. Of course, it's so tragic. It breaks everyone's heart to even consider it.
Yep.
But there's several things that I want to say. I'll try to make it very brief. One is the United States has the worst maternal mortality in the developed world. And this is despite the fact that we spend so much money on healthcare, and this has been going on for decades. So while we had Roe v. Wade, while we had abortions on every corner, we had horrible maternal mortality. Also, sadly, the maternal mortality is highest in Black women. Mm-hmm. And sadly, Black women also have the highest abortion rates. So abortion has not been protecting them. And there's many reasons I've written about this, but I won't go into the details. But there's many reasons that I think the abortion culture is worsening their risk of mortality. But a couple of things to mention. Pregnancy-related deaths, those that are caused by something to do with the pregnancy, either a complication or the delivery or something like that, only about a quarter of those occur on the day of delivery or within a week of delivery. So when we think of maternal mortality, we're thinking a catastrophic event, a hemorrhage in labor, something like that. And of course, those are so tragic and heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But that's only about a quarter of the maternal deaths that we document. The about half of the deaths occur after delivery, and we count them all the way up to the end of a year. What we're seeing with those later deaths is mental health complications, suicides, intimate partner homicides, substance overdoses. And I do want to say one more thing. We have no idea about mortality related to abortion. The CDC relies upon a death certificate of a woman to say that she was or had recently been pregnant. And many times the death certificates don't know, especially if we're talking about a woman who's had an abortion. So think this through. If a woman was coerced into an abortion of a child that she desired, and then she commits suicide, maybe on the due date of that baby, we can all recognize clearly that abortion drove her to suicide. That was an abortion-related death. The CDC does not have any ability to detect that. Abortion increases their risk. So that's been documented over and over again. And of course, that data is often ignored by abortion advocates who want to promote this narrative that somehow abortion is safer than childbirth, of course, ignoring the fact that one human dies in every abortion at least.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. A group of generous partners has challenged Assure supporters to give $500,000 by May 29th. If that goal is reached, they will release an additional $100,000. Your gift today can help unlock this challenge and reach more women before the abortion industry does. Visit firststeptolife.com to give today.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Ingrid Scott from the Charlotte Logier Institute about the science-based risk and complications of abortion and the realities of maternal health in the United States. What about the claim that childbirth is more dangerous than abortion? What are the limitations of the data used to support that claim?
Well, you know, as I mentioned a minute ago, we just We don't know all of the deaths that follow abortion. The data is very poor. In fact, even regarding childbirth, it's well acknowledged that the CDC's data is not good. Mm-hmm. But this claim is being recycled because the Journal of the American Medical Association, which unfortunately that used to be reputable, now it's become really a shill for the abortion industry. Mm-hmm. But they published an article just recently. It was just basically plugging in the CDC's incomplete data and saying, oh, look, here's all the abortion related deaths that we know about, which, by the way, probably represents merely the tiniest tip of the iceberg, especially when you consider the mental health deaths that occur. And we're comparing it to what we know about other maternal mortality. And by the way, abortion related deaths would go in both buckets, you know. Mm-hmm. So what we've got is a system where the data is terrible across the board, and yet abortion ideologues are willing to pretend like the data is good. And then they publish these studies where they say, oh, look, it looks like a woman is so much more likely, you know, to die from childbirth. And also it ignores, of course, the fact that a new human being comes into this world through childbirth. There's no other way to let that happen. So there's much good that is gained from a pregnancy. And again, abortions, except for those later ones that we talked about, most of them do happen earlier where, you know, the physiologic changes of pregnancy are not so pronounced. So it's just, again, just a very deceptive narrative that's meant to frighten women into having abortions rather than giving birth to their children.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, you mentioned a minute ago about the disparity of abortions, I'm saying, in the African-American community, and me being African-American myself. I mean, it's just really sad that we make up about 13% of the population. And I know in my city or in my state, we probably make up a third of the abortions. And so from your perspective, outside that, how does abortion intersect with pre-existing risk factors like poverty, chronic illness, and the lack of social support?
Well, you're absolutely right. So there are several factors to consider in that different populations have different risk factors. And unfortunately, the African-American population does have a higher incidence of those chronic illnesses, chronic hypertension, diabetes, sometimes obesity, even the ability to a genetic tendency to form blood clots is higher in the African-American population. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, because so many women are single moms living in poverty in this population, that increases the risk of those chronic illnesses, right? Yep. You know, so the stress, the hypertension, the inability to maybe get good medical care, to get a good diet. So all of these things compound to make the population at higher risk. And one of the things that breaks my heart is that I've seen so much of the narrative that says that somehow this is solely related to systemic racism, that the healthcare system doesn't care about Black women. What is that going to do? That's going to make her say, well, why should I go to the doctor? Because they don't care about me. That's not true. And again, to promote that type of a narrative is just likely to cause more harm. So, you know, we want to, we want to take care of Black women as well as we take care of any other woman. But it's important to realize that there are pre-existing things that cause that population to be at higher risk. So we should be addressing that. We should be talking about that instead of promoting these other politically driven narratives that don't really help.
Absolutely. And I believe if we did that, that would be true women's health care. It won't be a cover for the term abortion. It would be true women's health care that we're looking at. How do we lessen maternal deaths because of, you know, high blood pressure and diabetes and those things? Yeah. So you said that abortion limitations may actually protect some women from maternal harm. Can you explain that to for our listeners?
Later abortions, as I mentioned, we know that they're much more likely to cause a death. The CDC tells us 76 times as likely to die from an abortion in the second half of pregnancy compared to an early abortion. So an abortion limitation that keeps those later abortions from happening is going to protect women. Many women are at risk for mental health complications after abortion. And we know that there's subgroups that are at particularly high risk. Those who already have mental health disorders, those who have later abortions, those who have repeat abortions, those who are young, teenagers, and those who have unwanted abortions. So many women would like to go ahead and give birth to their child, but they feel like they're in a circumstance where abortion is their only choice. So all of those women are at higher risk for anxiety, depression, substance and alcohol misuse and overdose, even self-harm and suicide. So we know that those women, by limiting abortion, by keeping as many, causing so that they're not as many women having abortions, we're going to be protecting a lot of women from mental health deaths. Also, there's good evidence to tell us that surgical abortions can increase a woman's risk of having a preterm birth in her next pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And preterm births are associated with increased maternal mortality. So again, the morbidity for babies, that are born prematurely and suffer because of that. So again, by limiting surgical abortions, we're going to be protecting women from future pregnancy complications.
Yeah. Good.
So for many reasons like that, I think that these limitations will actually protect women from maternal mortality in the long run.
For listeners who want to be informed but feel overwhelmed by conflicting claims, what advice would you give them?
You mean for women who want to carry their pregnancies, or just people who would like to know, to understand the issue of abortion more?
Yeah, probably more our listeners. So if there's a listener that, they want to be informed but feel overwhelmed because there's so many different things that they're hearing. Yeah. What advice would you give them?
So I think it is important, and it is an overwhelming conversation, and it's hard to know what to believe. I think that we should all, when we hear things from mainstream media and from mainstream medical organizations, we need to listen with a skeptical ear. And, as we discussed, the Charlotte Lozier Institute does have very high quality information. So I would encourage your listeners to educate themselves, to find out what's really going on. How has the FDA removed safeguards so that women are getting drugs without ultrasound to document gestational age or to rule out ectopic pregnancy, without labs to prevent future pregnancy complications, without informed consent, without the ability to determine if a coercive man is getting these drugs? I mean, all of these horrible things are happening. Yeah. So we need to be aware of what's going on, consider our news source, and dig in and do the research to find out what is true. We also need to be aware that there are centers in all of our cities that are caring for these women. We need to know what is the pregnancy center nearest me and get to know them, support them financially, volunteer, talk to your pastor and say, how can we get involved? Because these women, again, most of them desire to give birth to their child, but if they don't have a supportive partner, they need people to come alongside them. And that's what the body of Christ is for. That's what pregnancy centers are for, to help them with their needs so that they can make the choice they really want to make, and that's to give birth to their children.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to say a plug for sure. We're always looking for volunteers and always looking for support. We serve, close to 2,000 women a year, and we can't do it except for the body of Christ comes alongside us and help us to do that. So it's kind of a shameless plug there, but I appreciate that.
Well, I love what you do. I love pregnancy centers. They're just filled with such beautiful, selfless people.
And we love what you do because it just gives us fuel. It kind of fuels the work that we do because you guys have done the research. So, okay. So finally, one more question. What gives you hope when it comes to improving women's health outcomes and protecting both the moms and the babies?
Well, I think the truth, the science is pro-mom and pro-baby.
Yeah.
So again, we know science shows us that the unborn child from the moment of fertilization is an amazingly complex human being. And so that's not debatable.
Yeah.
So we need to recognize the human rights of the person in the womb. But we also, if understood correctly, we recognize that abortion is a very, very poor solution to offer women in the midst of their crisis. There's so many ways we can support women better, walk alongside them. Again, talk to women about what really is the best way to have a relationship, mm-hmm. a covenantal marriage relationship where you know that the father of your children loves you and wants yes. to support and care for and protect you. That's the best way to raise a family. Yes. So we need to go back to the bare basics, because unfortunately our country has gotten so far away yes. from what yeah. really makes people happy.
Yeah.
What really helps people to flourish in this world. But I think as we go back and as we just very vocally explain to others in a loving way, this is the best way to mm-hmm. succeed. This is the best way to be happy. This mm-hmm. is the best way to have a relationship with others around you and with your God. I do believe that as we win hearts and minds, it's not going to happen politically, it appears. Yeah. But as we win hearts and minds to the truth, that really, I believe that change will come.
I totally agree with you. That's my prayer. So,
Dr. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today and for helping bring clarity, medical integrity, and compassion to a topic that is often clouded by misinformation. For our listeners, if you'd like to learn more about the research Dr. Scott referenced today, including studies on abortion complications, maternal mortality, and women's health, you can visit the Charlotte Lozier Institute website at LozierInstitute.org. That's Lozier, L-O-Z-I-E-R, Institute.org. Thank you for joining us on Life Matters.
Thank you, Tony.
Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. A group of generous partners has challenged Assure supporters to give $500,000 by May 29th. If that goal is reached, they will release an additional $100,000. Your gift today can help unlock this challenge and reach more women before the abortion industry does. Visit firststeptolife.com to give today. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.